Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. If we were compiling a list of the major religious figures of the 20th century, close to the top would have to be Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel. Admittedly, he doesn't have the notoriety of the likes of Martin Luther King, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Dorothy Day, or the Dalai Lama. But in certain circles, he is greatly admired for his work in interfaith relations, civil rights, anti-war efforts, and expansive Jewish theology. He's someone I've admired for quite a while, and my hope is that a new documentary that will debut soon will speak to a new generation of like-minded activists, seekers, and those who are committed to social justice. Spiritual Audacity, the Abraham Joshua Heschel story, will air over PBS in May. Locally, the film can be seen on our sister station, WGVU-TV, on May 16th. I'm very pleased to give you all a sneak preview by having the director of this monumental work with us today. His name is Martin Doblmeier. Martin holds degrees in religious studies and broadcast journalism. Since 1984, he has produced and directed more than 30 films focused on religion, faith, and spirituality. Martin combines a lifelong interest in religion with a passion for storytelling. Over the years, he has traveled on location to more than 40 countries to profile numerous religious leaders, spiritual communities, heads of state, and Nobel laureates. His films explore how belief can lead individuals to extraordinary acts, how spirituality creates and sustains communities, and how faith is lived in extraordinary ways. A moment ago, I mentioned the luminaries of faith, Bonhoeffer and Dorothy Day. Those two have been subjects of previous documentaries of Martin that are now available for viewing on YouTube. So we welcome to Common Threads, Martin Doblmeier. Hello, Martin.
Hello, Fred. Thank you for having me.
Certainly, certainly. First question is, this particular project on Heschel, what made you decide to create this now? Was it pretty much random, or was there something about what is going on today that said, no, the people need to know about Abraham Joshua?
Well, Abraham Heschel's story, the Spiritual Audacity film, is part of a series that I'm doing. It's called Prophetic Voices. This is a four-part series, and Heschel is the last of the four parts, on great figures of the 20th century that we feel as though we cannot forget. They include Reinhold Niebuhr, the great American public theologian, Howard Thurman, who was the African-American theologian and a great influence, a mentor to Martin Luther King Jr., Dorothy Day, who was the great Catholic social activist, and now the last one is Abraham Joshua Heschel, who I think is really one of the most extraordinary religious figures of the 20th century. And as you said in your introduction, it's true he may not have the same kind of name recognition that Martin Luther King does or Dietrich Bonhoeffer, but to look at his life and his writings, we look now 50 years back at what he left us as he passed away and realize what a really monumental figure he was and how we forget him at our own loss.
Clearly. Tell us a little bit about who he was. I know that he said he grew up surrounded by religious nobility. So let's talk about how he was raised and the stock that he comes from.
Yep. Heschel was born in Poland in 1907, and he really does come from this lineage, this dynasty of rabbis, Jewish rabbis, rebbes, who were influential people throughout the course of many years, across centuries, really. And so it's already understood when he's born that he will become a rabbi, that he will become a leader within his own community. And as we show in the film, it's even told as a story by his own daughter, who said that when Rabbi Heschel was just 5 years old, he would be stood up on a table and he'd get a chance to preach at 4, 5, 6 years old. He'd get to say something, and people were already listening as though he was already endowed, as far as they were concerned, with a natural sense of authority just by who he was. But then you discover that Heschel was a very, very serious scholar. He took studying the traditions of his faith and applying that to what was happening all throughout the course of his life. So he goes to the University of Berlin in Germany, and he excels there. He gets his rabbi's certificate. He becomes a rabbi early in life. So he's way ahead of the curve academically. So he's already sort of established a role for himself as a brilliant thinker. But it's not until he comes to the United States in 1940, in the beginning of World War II, that he begins to establish himself as a prolific writer. And it's because of those writings that people like Martin Luther King Jr. and others get a sense of why he would be important for them to employ in their civil rights movement.
You just mentioned a minute ago that he had a particular authority. I believe he was quoted as saying that he had authority but not power, and many conflate the two. What is your understanding of his understanding of the difference between authority and power?
Well, I think we all understand that power comes traditionally with position or money. That's not the case for Heschel. He was never in a position of authority in that sense, never had wealth, could never buy power. But the reason why Abraham Heschel had authority because of his gift of wisdom and a sense, the soul that he conveyed to everybody that came in contact with him, gave him a natural sense of authority. That's why Martin Luther King Jr. and the entire civil rights movement wanted Abraham Heschel by their side when they made those famous marches in Selma, Alabama. It's why people like Reinhold Niebuhr, who was considered the most brilliant public theologian of his day, wanted the friendship, the association, the confirmation from somebody like Rabbi Abraham Heschel, because they saw in him a brilliance that really couldn't be bought. He was just that kind of character.
Who sought whom out in the civil rights movement? Was Heschel proactive in inserting himself into that, or was he contacted by people who said, "We need your help in this effort"?
Early on, it was a contact from Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement to get him invited into it. But once, let's go back for a second. Abraham Heschel and Martin Luther King Jr. actually had their first meeting in 1963. It was at a conference in Chicago on race and religion. And they were both brought in as keynote speakers. So obviously, Heschel was already an acclaimed spokesperson for his faith, for the Jewish faith at that time. But when Martin Luther King heard Heschel speak, and when Heschel got a chance to meet Martin Luther King Jr., they both realized they were kindred spirits. They were both leaders. They were both descended in their own faith traditions. They were considered both political and social leaders, religious leaders. And there was this immediate bond between the two of them that would last throughout the course of their lifetime. And that's why Heschel was one of the first people that the movement called in 1965 when those famous marches were going to happen in Selma, Alabama.
Let's jump back a little bit. I was actually planning on talking about World War II and Germany at that point before jumping into civil rights. Not that we have to have a purely chronologically appropriate conversation here, but I did want to get a sense of the culture of Berlin, because the way it is described, first of all, it doesn't seem to be as debauched as one might gather from watching Cabaret or reading the book I Am a Camera that inspired Cabaret. And apparently it was a strong intellectual center. Was it a strong religious center as well? Were Judaism and Christianity thriving at that point in, say, Berlin in the 20s?
Yes, I think it was. It was, as you said, an intellectual center. I mean, people were coming from all over the world and to Berlin to be educated. Certainly Heschel wanted to go there from Poland, and he did. He shows up there in 1927. It's just a time obviously it was the 20s, and the same things were happening in Germany as were happening in the United States. There was There was plenty of partying going on and a lot of people making a good time of it. But there was also a center for great intellectual pursuit, science and pursuit of knowledge. And that's what Heschel came for. And he studied philosophy. Great philosophers at the time were there. Religion was thriving at the time in the 20s. And I think that, but also too, towards the end of the 20s, as we begin to enter into the 30s, something very different is taking over Germany, and he was there and witnessed all of that, too.
How about the fact that he moved from a Hasidic culture in Poland to Berlin in the 20s, where the Reform movement in Judaism was birthed? I'm curious if that made him, if that encouraged him to become more liberal than his upbringing would have assumed.
Well, I always get anxious about the word liberal. We have so many ghosts on all those kind of verbiage that we have to be really careful of. I think that Abraham Heschel was always a traditional, conservative, centered Jew in his heart. He was progressive in his desire and his hunger for knowledge and understanding. He wanted to be up to date on what all philosophies that were going on. And he's reading Kant and everybody else. But at the same time, I think he's studying in the Reform Seminary, but he's also studying in the conservative, the Orthodox Seminary while he's in Berlin. So he's getting all of this wide array of information and experiences that are happening to him. So he's getting an intellectual education at the University of Berlin, but he's studying in the seminaries, both conservative, Orthodox, and Reform. And so all of this is playing on him as a very young man, but he's so smart and so capable of sifting through it. He understands exactly who he is. He doesn't seem to ever go through a sort of an existential crisis himself. He understands exactly who he is and his relationship to God. And I think that always kept him centered, always centered for him.
And again, going back to Nazi Germany, when did he make his escape? And at the time, in 1940, how challenging was that for him to get out?
He's actually, he doesn't leave on his own choice. He's forced to leave Germany. It's 1938, and he and other Jews are arrested and deported. Now, it's just across the border into Poland, but he's deported as a Jew in October of 1938, and that's only weeks before Kristallnacht, which is the famous Night of Broken Glass, when systematically Jewish stores were torched, burned, destroyed, synagogues, Jewish schools were destroyed. And so he was forced out of the country just before the real violence began. There had already been episodes of imprisonment. Jewish thinkers and writers were being arrested. But he got out in 1938. And then spent some time in Poland, came over to England and spent a little time in England. But finally, in 1940, he was identified by the president, Julian Morgenstern, at Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, a reform school. And they got a visa for him. He was given a visa with a handful of other Jewish scholars who were considered really at the top of their game. And brought over to the United States, where he was able to be provided sanctuary here in the United States.
Do you know that when he was in Poland, did he see the writing on the wall and want to get out of there in time as well? Or is it just...
He did. I mean, okay. it was becoming, by 1938, and certainly after Kristallnacht, I think there was this exodus. Everybody was getting clearer and clearer about what was happening. Jews were trying to flee out of Germany at the time, many trying to flee Europe altogether to come to the United States. One of the sad chapters in American history is how closed America was to allowing Jews to emigrate out of places like Germany and come to the United States. But he knew what was happening. He could see that. And the tragedy is that he left behind his mother and three sisters, who would eventually perish during World War II, his mother and one sister in the Warsaw Ghetto, and then two other sisters who were lost as well. So he was somebody who really had a firsthand experience at the horror of the Holocaust.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Martin Doblmeyer. He is the director of the documentary, which will be airing shortly, Spiritual Audacity, the Abraham Joshua Heschel story. And it can be seen on WGVU-TV on May 16th. He turned, this is what he said, he turned his sorrow into a song. Can you explain that?
Well, I think what's interesting about Heschel, is, and I have, you know, I've been reading Heschel now for quite some time. You see a man who's forced out of the country that he loved and cared about, who lost his mother and three sisters to the horrors of the hatred of the Nazis. And yet to read his works, you don't find a lot of anger and a commitment for revenge in any way, shape, or form in Abraham Heschel. He's somebody, I think, who infused God into every notion that he had about how he was going to live his life. And so the tragedy that he suffered personally was something that he could find a way to come out of it and commit himself that he would not be indifferent. And that's the big, I think, mantra for Abraham Joshua Heschel. He took all of what would have been anger and frustration and hatred and revenge and turned that into activism, whereby he said, we can no longer not be involved. We can't be indifferent. He watched as nations around the world became indifferent about what was happening in Nazi Germany. And as he saw elements of injustices happening around him then, especially when he came to the United States, he was fully committed to saying that the one great thing we can't do is we cannot remain indifferent in the face of injustice.
I saw once he rebelled against the use of the word strict in describing his religious practice. He said he preferred the word loving or lovingly. It reminded me a few years ago, there was a newspaper article done on a religious group here in Grand Rapids, and they were practicing some Eastern spirituality, and they were vegetarians. And the newspaper article referred to them as strict vegetarians. And I spoke to one of the people in the group, and they said, we hate it when people use the word strict vegetarians. It looks like you're eating with a scowl on your face. He says, we're joyful vegetarians. and you know, seeing Heschel, you know, in your documentary and in other recorded events, I think that's it. He was loving in his practice, even though to someone who didn't know him but knew what the practices were, might call them strict. Anything to add to that in terms of how he lived his life?
Well, I think that I don't think he saw the practice of his faith as a burden in any way, shape, or form. I think he saw it as a privilege. I think the opportunity to honor God, to love God, to express that, and in many ways to teach others how to integrate God into their lives and to respond with love to the commandment of being involved in the world that you're living in, I think he saw that as a privilege. And as far as adherence, I mean, he was Orthodox, but at the same time, he was asked one time, how do you describe yourself, Rabbi Heschel? Do you consider yourself a Reformed Jew, conservative, Orthodox? And he famously said, I don't consider myself a Jew who's looking for an adjective. I consider myself a person of faith and a Jew. But I think he found a way to be able to communicate to Jews all across the spectrum, and to Christians, and even to people who were atheists who would look at, and you could not help but respect Abraham Heschel, because you saw in him a reflection of a God he loved, and the way he behaved out of that you could only admire.
His dissertation was on the prophets from a Jewish perspective, obviously. But the book now is a part of Christian education in seminaries and colleges. What do you think would be the difference between how Jews and Christians might see the prophets, if any difference?
Well, I think that prophets are central in Judaism. They are. And I think it's quite remarkable that despite the fact that there have been many, many books written on the prophets throughout the course of history, His book has become widely recognized as one of the most important books ever written about these central characters to the story of Judaism in the world. And I think deservingly so. I don't think that necessarily Christians look at the prophets necessarily in the same way or with the same adherence. You know, from a Catholic point of view, Catholics have their saints that they honor and that they study. But the prophets, I think, are so central to Judaism, and he's able to translate them, talk about them, write about them, and translate them in such a way that they become alive as characters. And that's what really inspired Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Movement. It was that book on the prophets that really became part of the marching orders for the Civil Rights Movement. And that's why I think they were so excited and hopeful that he would be part of their movement.
I'm wondering, do you think, this is speculation, but do you think that one of the differences is that when Christians read the prophets in the Bible, they focus so much on those prophets predicting the birth and the life of Jesus, whereas Jews take them at face value for what they are saying about the times when it was written and allowing that wisdom to carry on over into today?
Now, that's a great question, because I do myself come out of a Christian tradition. I studied religion formally and come out of that Christian tradition. And I think that's probably the case. And we try to make mention in the facts in the film several times, the fact that people oftentimes mistakenly think in terms of prophets as people who are predicting the future. But what they really are truth tellers, Navi. They're telling the truth that has to be told, facing the realities that have to be faced, and in some ways bringing an understanding in a very human sense to what God is feeling about the current situation. So for me, having read the prophets and having watched Heschel, and the influence that he's been able to bring into the Christian context by his interpretation of the prophets, I think for me it's just very inspiring to see, and it's given me a slightly different window on how I see them in my own life.
He had a great affinity for Black Christianity. We know this, obviously, through his relationship with the Civil Rights Movement and Martin Luther King. And two questions. What drew him to that? And in your answer, if you could also comment on his quote. He said that if Judaism has any future in the USA, it is through the Black church.
I think there was, from early on, a great respect for Abraham Heschel within especially the Black leadership of the Civil Rights Movement. They saw in him a figure who was slightly older at the time, a little bit of a grandfatherly or an uncle kind of a figure in Abraham Heschel, who physically embodied what they imagined a prophet looked like, with his beard, white beard, graying beard, and hair, long hair. And so he just became a sort of an embodiment of the prophets for them. And what Heschel saw within the African-American religious experience was a fervorness, a sense of physical commitment to worshiping and honoring and loving the God that you're called to care for. And he saw that as a hopeful sign. He felt as though that within the Black experience, you had an opportunity to honor God, to worship God with your whole body. And he loved that. And what's really interesting is I've spent a lot of time now with Susanna Heschel, the daughter of Abraham Heschel. And yes, Abraham Heschel said that if there was a future for Judaism in the United States, he saw that in that sort of the ferventness of worship by African-American churches. But she said now in retrospect, looking at the way that he continues to be held up, Abraham Heschel continues to be held up within the African-American religious experience, was the most sincere form of gratitude and adoration for her father that she saw across the board. As far as, her father being remembered and held in high esteem, all that came out of the civil rights movement, and because of what they recognized was this extraordinary gift that he brought to their movement, and they were forever grateful. And so when she gets together with people like Jesse Jackson, and recently until he passed away with John Lewis, they never, ever stopped telling her how much indebted they were to her father and the way that he joined their movement and the great gifts that he brought to the civil rights movement.
I want to thank you so much, Martin. We are down to the wire for this episode of Common Threads, but we have many more questions to ask. I'm hoping you'll be able to join us next week.
It went very quickly, Fred. Thank you.
Certainly. You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today has been Martin Doblmeyer. He is the director of the upcoming documentary Spiritual Audacity, the Abraham Joshua Heschel Story, which will be airing over our sister station, WGVU-TV, on May 16th. Please join us again next week for more conversation with Martin here on Common Threads.